Welcome to the programme once again, David.
Thank you very much, Brendan.
David, I think it's probably since the last time I spoke to you that we had the wonderful Northern Lights experience, and I presume the Astronomy Ireland has had lots of people contacting them about that. It was such an amazing one for all parts of Ireland, really.
Yeah, it was incredible. We were able to predict it, so everyone knew it was coming. We had tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 people that were alerted to the coming massive aurora. Later on, NASA reckoned it could have been the best in 500 years.
Wow.
So the June issue of the magazine, which is just out now, is dedicated to the aurora, so all Irish photos. So if you want a souvenir of what's probably going to be the best aurora of our lifetimes, get onto astronomy.ie and get your copy now.
Yeah. No, it was an amazing experience for so many people. I mean, I think a lot of people went out to wherever they could to get views of it, and they weren't disappointed. But, I mean, I suppose, what exactly were we looking at? What was there? What causes them, I suppose?
Well, this was the third one I've seen from Ireland this year, and we're expecting more. This one was so bright, though, that you could see it from towns and cities. And a lot of people did, as you'll see in the magazine. And they're caused by explosions on the sun, put it simply. The sun is a huge, seething cauldron of nuclear reactions going on at the core that drives the temperature up to 15 million degrees Celsius. And about a quarter of the sun's diameter is bubbling away at that temperature deep down below. The rest of the sun is just bubbling over from the heat below. You think of it like a pot of water boiling on a stove. The flames are very hot. The water is pretty hot, and there's these huge bubbles of steam popping off on the top of the boiling water as it's boiling furiously. And that's what happens on the sun all the time, except the bubbles are about the size of France.
Okay.
So it's slightly different
scale
than what we're used to. And sometimes things block that heat from getting up from below, magnetic fields. Complicated, you don't need to understand, other than the heat's been blocked. The pressure builds up. Eventually it has to blow its top, and it does. And billions of tons of radiation. So not rocks or pebbles or actual solid particles, individual bits of atoms, radiation, get hurtled out into space. And if the Earth's in the firing line, then that's what happens. And it appears that we had a couple of these explosions happening simultaneously. They caught up with each other and gave the Earth's magnetic field a real belt. And because the Earth has a magnetic field, this radiation, which is charged, gets deflected into the north and South Pole. Now, if you go up to the North Pole, or even northern Norway, inside the Arctic Circle, in the winter there, you'll see an aurora practically every night. I've led four groups that have gone up there. We had countless auroras during the week that we were there. But in Ireland, it only happens that they're strong enough to come this far south about 1% of the time. So they're fairly rare. But if you watch out for them and keep watching our social media, it's free of charge, Ireland's biggest aurora alert service. You'll see we had actually one predicted a couple of days ago. It turned out it was very weak. They were hoping it was going to be strong. So aurora forecasting is not an exact a science as, say, eclipse forecasting, where we're guaranteed the eclipse will happen within a few seconds. With aurora, we can sometimes be out by hours. I've seen them out by 12 hours. And sometimes the aurora doesn't happen at all. And very occasionally, there's an aurora that we didn't even predict.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit like weather. In fact, they call it space weather. Explosions on the sun, we never know how they're going to hit, how strong they're going to be until it actually happens. But we did know that this one on May the 10th was coming. We told people the night before, no aurora that night, but the next night, this looks like there's a storm coming. And sure enough, it exceeded all expectations.
Absolutely. Now, lots of people were talking about also the possibility of it putting out electrical objects, that is, the power is so strong or something. Did that kind of thing happen, or is that a possibility that systems would be affected by these particular storms?
It has happened in the past. There was a huge storm happened in 1859. There wasn't much electrical infrastructure around back then except the telegraph, and it did electrocute a few telegraph operators. But there was this classic case in 1989 when the power grid for some major Canadian cities went down. And the problem is it blew some of the giant transformers that are needed for city-wide, city-scale power grids. And they only make one of those in the world every 1 month. So they're quite a rare item. And the fear has always been, if every giant power converter across the world and national grids was to be zapped in one night. Well, it could be decades before the world will be back up to where it came, because we don't have the infrastructure to build more quickly. And so people have been studying the aurora very carefully. We now have satellites watching the sun. We try to understand the science behind it. There are satellites watching the Earth to see how the Earth's magnetic field is behaving as well. And we've discovered techniques to mitigate a lot of the effects. So I'm not aware of any major outage that was caused by the May the 10th Great Aurora of 2024, as it's going to be known. And indeed, even back in 2003, I remember we had an RTE camera crew out with us in County Meath filming the beautiful aurora we had then, so-called Halloween auroras, they were called. But going back to 1989, it was a different, that was a sort of wake-up call for humanity. We now know the best thing is not to shut down the power grid, it's actually to leave them open and let the current that's induced flow through the system, and that causes less damage. But satellites and astronauts, they have to be very careful in all this radiation bombarding the Earth.
Yeah, and that's of course one of the big things for the space, exploration. That how do we keep protect ourselves if you're traveling through space with all of that? And I know we've talked about that before, but I suppose the this time, when, as you say, the aurora was amazing, and we might not get to see anything like that again. But at the moment, is there anything spectacular to see in the sky?
No, don't worry. You probably will see a very good aurora again this year, and it could. There isn't one forecast for tonight, I can tell you. But tomorrow we could be issuing a different forecast for the night after. So, you know, Facebook, Twitter or X and Instagram. Go to astronomy.ie. Down the bottom you'll find the links. Make sure you're following Astronomy Ireland, because we'll predict major satellites like the manned space station and the aurora every single day, 365 days a year, including Christmas Day. We predicted every single day. And so you won't miss one in the future. So that's the first thing to tell people. Totally free of charge. Service from Astronomy On. As I said, I've seen three aurora with the naked eye and beautiful of photographs, not as strong as May the 10th, just in 2024 alone. And we had dozens of reports last year. And we'll have more because we're coming to sunspot maximum end of this year, early next year. And the aurora numbers peak 2 or 3 years after the sunspot maximum. So this is right at the start. So don't think you won't see one. You probably will, especially if you follow Astronomy Ireland. We'll make sure we don't miss 90% of the predictions of them. But yeah, like you said, there are other things happening in the sky. Planet-wise, it's all happening in the morning sky. So the best planet to see is actually Saturn. And Saturn, if you've got a small telescope, is absolutely incredible. Every 15 years, its rings tip edge on. But as we go around the sun 30 times faster than Saturn goes around the sun, we can actually almost line the rings up for a year or so either side. And that's happening right now. In fact, the end of June, the rings will be almost edge-on. They're going to tilt back towards us by about November, and then they'll close down after November until March of next year, when they will be exactly edge-on, and even the Hubble Space Telescope can't see the rings at that stage. So that's all happening in morning skies now. And if you want an excuse to see Saturn, go out on June the 27th, or June the 28th, those in the morning. So you're talking about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning before it gets bright. That's a Thursday morning and a Friday morning. And you'll see Saturn near the moon on those 2 days. So the moon will signpost it in case you don't know which bright star it is. And if you've got a small telescope, take a close-up look, and you probably, actually a small telescope, you probably won't be able to see the rings. They're that close to edge on.
Well, that's very interesting that they're not always visible, because you have this idea that they're always set in exactly the same spot. So Saturn, of course, is such a fascinating planet. It's, you know, they say the rings, I suppose, are the ones, and I think we talked about them not that long ago, but the fact that they're probably left over from an explosion of some sort or a crash, that they've become pulverized and they're just kind of stuck in the orbit. Is that why they're there?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, the rings tip edge on every 15 years. So next year is the official ring plane crossing, it's called, and the next one, I think, is 2039. But the rings themselves, we think, are caused by a moon that got too close to Saturn, because you have to remember what Saturn is. It's a huge planet, second biggest in the solar system. So it's about 8 times wider than the Earth. So it has enormous gravity. So any moon that gets a bit too close will actually be shredded, because the near side of that moon will be pulled, being closer to Saturn, a little bit more strongly than the far side of Saturn. And the gravity of Saturn is so strong, that effect is big enough to shred the moon. And that's what we think happened. Some moon, probably an icy moon, with a bit of rock mixed in, got too close to Saturn, and Saturn shredded it into literally billions of boulders that are all going around Saturn. So it's not a solid sheet. It's more like, say, a cloud in the sky. We know clouds in our sky are just tiny water droplets that are not touching each other, but from the ground they look like a big fluffy cloud. Same with Saturn's rings. The boulders aren't touching each other. They're all going around Saturn in orbit on their own. There's probably one boulder per football pitch, to give you a rough idea of what it looks like if you could get into the rings and travel with them. And from a distance, though, it looks like a solid sheet. But it's a very thin sheet. Somebody worked out if you made a sheet of newspaper, which is very thin paper, you'd need a sheet about the size, again, of a football pitch to get the thickness of the rings relative to the how wide they are accurate. So when that thin sheet of paper goes edge on, you can see why they appear to disappear. So it's an absolutely fascinating place, an incredible sight in a big telescope. And in fact, the barbecue, our starbecue, our annual giant star party that happens every year, Saturn is going to be the star attraction, if you like, at that particular event. So if you haven't got a giant telescope, come along August 31st and have a look through ours. Yeah. You will be amazed.
We'll be talking to you about that, no doubt. But of course, Saturn has moons itself. So, I mean, they obviously can resist the pull of the main planet. Is that, how do they do that?
Well, it's the same way our moon does, and the same way the Earth does going around the Sun. On the Earth, we've got air. So, you know, if you drive your car down a hill and then onto a flat road, the hill will give you a bit of speed. So let's say freewheel your bike, let's say, down a hill, you'll pick up speed. When you get to the flat, your bike will be going quite fast, but eventually it will slow up because of air friction. But in space, there's no air. So if you were doing the same experiment in space, your bike would keep going forever, well, millions of years anyway. And that's what happens out in space. Once things are given a bit of a kick, they tend to go off in a straight line and never stop. But if you're near a planet and you're a moon, you'll go round that planet. Or if you're a planet like the Earth, you'll go round the Sun. So the Sun is continuously pulling us towards it, and we're trying to fly off out into space. And it's been balanced just at the Earth's distance from the Sun, that our speed keeps us like this far away from the Sun for at least the last 4.5 billion years. And it's the same with the moons going around Saturn. There's nothing, there's no friction, there's nothing, no air, nothing to slow them up. So they'll keep going around for millions upon millions of years. And Saturn has got loads of moons. I always lose count because they're always finding a few tiny ones every year. Last I checked, I think it was about 140-something moons. But there's six big ones. And, you know, the biggest one is about the size of the planet Mercury, bigger than our moon. Not as big as the Earth, though. And they go down in size from that, right the way down to things that are... Well, I mean, if we were to count all the individual boulders in its rings, you could argue Saturn has billions of moons. Yeah. If you want things that are a few kilometers across, I think 142. Every so often in Astronomy Island magazine, we'll have X new moons of Saturn have been found, bringing the total to, as I think it was 142 in the last 12 months.
Incredible. I suppose, David, just before we finish up, and you mentioned Saturn there, but are there other things to look out for particularly?
Yeah, there are, yeah. So if you get Astronomy Island magazine, it's aimed at the general public, it'll tell you what to see with the naked eye. So coming up in 3 days' time, on the 16th of June, this is in the evening, so that's this Sunday, the bright star called Spica, plainly visible naked eye, brightest star in the constellation of Virgo, is going to be very close to the moon. You should be able to see it with the naked eye. A pair of binoculars will be stunning. You get the moon with the star sitting right next to it. And in fact, if you can find the moon in daylight, which is easy enough, you'll actually see it less than a half of a moon's width away from the edge of the moon. And there's a diagram in the magazine showing you that. And if you order it online, you'll get it posted to you by the next day. So it might even be if you'd order it now, you might just get it by tomorrow. But there's other stars going near the moon. Antares, the brightest moon in star in Scorpius, is very close to the moon, middle of next week, the 19th and 20th. We have the solstice happening on June the 20th, which is the start of summer. It's not the 1st of June. It's not the 1st of May. They're human constructs. The real seasons are based on the solstice and equinoxes. So June the 20th is the start of the Irish summer. There'll be a full moon the day after, the 21st. Saturn on the 27th and 28th near the moon in the morning sky. That requires your alarm clock. And even the planet Neptune is passing fairly close to the moon at the end of the month. And then there'll be loads more things like that happening in July, and the same in August, and the same in September. It just goes on and on and on, and keeps us very busy.
It keeps us everybody very busy. Well, David, it's great talking to you again, and thank you so much for being with us. And as I say, astronomy.ie for all the information, and get onto that and become a member and get your magazine and all. But thank you so much for being with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Bye, David. Bye.